WLCR, Mount Washington, Louisville.
All right, be careful out there. It is raining cats and dogs. The Green Deal is out. Okasa, is that her name? Okasa? She's introduced the Green Deal. We're going to have to kick that around on the other part of the program. But we're going to do something really fun today. And I am a public school graduate.
We don't get much intellectual content in here, but we do have fun.
We do have some fun. Now, I am a public school graduate, so you all know that it's a big stretch for me to talk about St. Thomas Aquinas. But we are going to do this today. And I think it is utterly...
St. who?
The dumb ox. That's what they used to call him. Huh. Ran across this fantastic piece over at National Catholic Register by our guest today. His name is David Smither. And if you're betting out there, if I'm going to put an S on that at some point, the odds are pretty good. So get a pool going. He is a convert to the faith. David was raised Episcopalian. He is a Catholic writer and speaker. He spent his adolescence in rebellion against God after a traumatic abduction and murder of his sister, Laura. Oh, my. After searching for the truth and after a short while dabbling in Buddhism and Eastern mysticism, he experienced a dramatic conversion to Christ and was received into the church in 2008. All right, so he's got a 11-year anniversary coming up. A sixth-generation Texan, David studied philosophy at the University of St. Thomas in Houston, and after graduating, he did what any self-respecting, unemployed Texas bachelor would do, Texas bachelor degree of philosophy would do. He went to work in the oil fields. Good for him. He has been working in the energy sector for the past 7 years as an equipment procurement professional focused on international products. And we're hoping that we can help him with a second career that he launched in 2018 in writing and public speaking. He writes about Catholic philosophy, theology, culture, and political economy. He's contributed essays to the National Catholic Register and the online journal Thomistica. He travels the country speaking for the National Criminal Justice Training Center, sharing his sister's stories with law enforcement officers so they may improve their response to child abductions. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about that as well. You can learn more about David's work at davidasmither.com and follow him on Twitter at davidasmither. We welcome to talk about this great article called St. Thomas Aquinas for Beginners.
That would be us.
Welcome to the program, David.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for having me on.
You know, this is an interesting and great piece, and I'm glad they published it, at least it seemed to me, in its entirety, because it is, you know, kind of a lengthy piece compared to a lot of 750-word things you see in the paper. I want to talk.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised by that. The initial feedback that I got was that it was a little bit on the lengthy side, so I figured they would cut a lot out, but they hardly edited it, the piece at all.
Excellent.
I was very
nice.
Pleased about that.
Well, it's an excellent piece, and we've been struggling on this show to remind people that we have quite an intellectual history, and in my view, one of the greatest thinkers of all time, and so many of our foibles in today's world with regard to so many moral issues. Boy, we could benefit from more thinking like St. Thomas Aquinas. So tell us about why you wrote the piece, and let's get started from there.
Right. Well, I agree with everything that you said there, and really my motivation for writing it was I want more people to... I want to make St. Thomas more accessible to a wider audience. I was very privileged. I got to attend the University of St. Thomas in Houston, and so I was, you know, got to be trained in the angelic doctor's thought from a lot of great philosophers and theologians at that institution. And, you know, reading Aquinas is pretty challenging when you first approach him. And I've talked to a lot of people over the years who have told me that, you know, they pick up the Summa or they pick up something else that had been written by Aquinas, and it's kind of like wading through cement, you know. It's not it's not an easy text to approach.
Right.
But on the other hand, I think that very often Thomas, once you get a few key terms in place and you understand the logic of the text, which is one of the things I tried to break down in that article, was how do you navigate your way around a Summa article? And if no one's ever explained that to you, they can be, you know, pretty daunting and pretty easy to get lost in. But once you grasp the big picture and the logic of what he's doing, it just pops wide open. And I maintain that Thomas himself is very, very clear. It's actually Thomas that muddle things up a lot of the time.
Okay.
Interesting. Go ahead, Vince.
No, that's
I wanted to ask, as an aside, it's so funny because a couple weeks ago there was a post on a Facebook from one of our friends in the intelligent design community, and I was, you know, relatively complimentary, but I said one of the things that kind of disappoints me with regard to the intelligent design community is they don't appropriately use the thinking of St. Thomas Aquinas in regards to, you know, dealing with creation itself. And I think that's it's a huge and maybe in many ways fatal failure of that particular movement, because it seems to me they're taking on the argument purely from a materialistic perspective. So talk to us a little bit about metaphysics. Why should we concern ourselves with what some would consider these abstract thoughts of a medieval monk?
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. Well, metaphysics itself, I mean, the term has come under a lot of derision with the last few centuries in modern philosophy. In many ways, the project of modern philosophy, both from a rationalist and a empiricist tradition, was to throw out classical metaphysics, and a lot of contemporary philosophy disputes the validity of metaphysics at all. They say you can't do it. So I guess for a lot of listeners, maybe the first question is, what is metaphysics? And the classical understanding of it is really it's the science of being as being, which, what does that mean? It's trying to investigate the deepest first principles of reality, the basic basic concepts like causality. Aquinas analyzes being in terms of act and potency, which is a distinction that he gets from Aristotle and goes back to the analysis of change. It solves a lot of problems, but really it's all very commonsensical. I mean, these are very abstract terms, and one of the things I did in the piece there was try to direct people to a couple of two very good books, I think, that break down some of the abstract terminology and make it really accessible, which is Ed Fazer's book, Aquinas, and then Mortimer Adler's classic, Aristotle for Everybody. But to put it in and make it very concrete in dialogue with what you were saying, intelligent design, getting clear on what a theologian like Aquinas means by creation is very important in adjudicating an issue like that. Mm-hmm. So for St. Thomas, creation is not a past event. It's not something that, you know, God is the big banger, and, you know, he banged out the big bang 15 billion years ago, and ever since then he's just in the background. No, on Aquinas's view, and this is not just St. Thomas, I mean, this is traditional Catholic theology, creation is an ongoing event now.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the famous five ways that he proves God's existence, the first way that he calls the first and the most manifest, because the evidence, the data is the most manifest, is an analysis of the reality of change. Things are changing all the time, all around us, in a variety of different ways. And when you plumb the depths of what that really means, you come to you have to posit a reality that he calls the uncaused cause, or maybe more accessible, call it the unchanged changer. And that's a reality which ultimately he calls God, which is necessary for understanding any change that is happening here and now. So it's not the deist God that's, you know, way off in the past in creation. No, this is a very present and active, involved God. And when that's clearly stated, then the debates between, say, creation and evolution really dissolve. It's not so much that you solve the problem, you dissolve the problem. It's a non-problem when you understand creation the way that St. Thomas does. I heard one Thomist speaker, I think it may have been Peter Kraft, told a joke in one of his lectures. He said that if St. Thomas were to see the Darwinian bumper sticker with, you know, the Christian fish and then then Darwin, which evolutionists see as kind of an ironic, you know, jab at Christians, he would actually interpret it as an argument for intelligent design.
Yep. That's
so
interesting.
I know there's a lot there and there's a lot to unpack, but the you know, looking at metaphysics, especially from the point of view of someone like St. Thomas, you solve a lot of the problems that come up with debates between science and religion, faith and reason. And again, it's not so much that a lot of the problems that people talk about are just simply non-issues once you put them in their proper context with a proper theological understanding. I want to just put a real quick plug here. There's a great project from some Dominican theologians called Thomistic Evolution. You can find this series of essays at a website called ThomisticEvolution.org.
Oh, excellent.
And they published it as a book, but I think all the essays are online for free. They put them out in the form of parish bulletins, and it's a whole series of very, very accessible and clearly written essays that really introduce the whole Thomistic worldview from the point of view of looking at the question of biological evolution and trying to put that science in dialogue with our Catholic faith. And it's a relatively recent project. I think they're still working on it, but they're doing some really good stuff over
there. Sounds like a great show topic. We may have to follow that up.
Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about... Now, Aquinas was a student of Aristotle, as I understand it. I'm certainly no...
in a remote sense.
Well...
That's right. He was a student of St. Albert in a more direct sense.
St. Albert, yeah. Okay. But talk to us a little bit about...
Baptizing Aristotle?
Well, I just... The whole chapter's on the four causes. To me, really changed the way I've thought about a lot of things. Can you break that down for folks? Just... And then I want to get to some more of the specifics about how people can get a better introduction to Aquinas.
Right. Yeah, first of all, just on Aristotle in general. So Aristotle was an ancient Greek philosopher and ancient scientist, really, is would be a better way to classify him, about 2,500 years ago. He was a student of Plato, who was the student of Socrates, and everything that we know about Socrates is written through Plato's dialogues, actually. Socrates didn't write anything. And then Plato trained Aristotle, who then founded his own school. And he was faithful to a lot of Plato's ideas, but he broke with his teacher on a number of things. And there's a lot of great stuff that we could talk about. Again, I would refer people to that book by Mortimer Adler, Aristotle for Everybody, as a good introduction.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the most important ideas that he had is this, he called the theory of the four causes. And it might be more accessible to say the four be causes, because each cause is the answer to a question.
That's a good way of putting it. Excellent. Okay.
So for Aristotle, and Aquinas just follows him completely in this, adopting this as a framework, to fully understand everything, we have to be able to answer four questions about it. Which is what it is, which is what he calls the formal cause, which is its essence or its form, as the technical term he uses, the form. So it's the definition. It's what is the thing. And then secondly, what is it made of, which he calls the material cause, which you might say, what is it made out of? What is the matter that form is instantiated in? So that's the material cause. The efficient cause answers the question, how did the form get into the matter? So how did that matter become what it is? And then the fourth cause, which is really the most important one, is he calls the final cause, which can be thought of as the
why,
the purpose, is what is the goal or the end or the meaning of the thing? What is it? Why? It's really answering the question, why? Why does that thing exist? What's it for? And if you can answer those four questions about any given entity, you have a pretty good picture of what it is.
Mm-hmm. And the abuse of what those things would be there for. So,
I'm sorry, say again?
Well, what I mean by that is, for example, marriage. You could apply, or am I right? You could apply the concept of marriage to those four causes.
You can apply the four causes to marriage.
And
that's a good point, because it's not just physical objects that you can apply this to, but to any reality like the institution of marriage.
Right. And so it's often, you know, we are often accused of, I don't know what's the word, Bible thumpers or whatever, but most reasonable Catholics who hold the view that marriage is between a man and a woman do so often out of these principles we're talking about here, not necessarily simply revelation. In other words, you can hold the view that there's no such thing as same-sex marriage without ever opening a Bible. Am I correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is such a thing as natural marriage.
True.
Pope, I think it was Pius XI in Casti Canubi, the encyclical Casti Canubi, which was really the first time that a pope wrote very explicitly about marriage and sexual ethics. He said in there that there is such a thing which is a natural marriage, which must be recognized even by the church. I mean, there's a certain dignity and there's a certain indissolubility even within non-sacramental marriage, which means marriage between people who are not baptized.
Excellent. All right, so let's get to the piece. And Vince, I don't want to roll you over. You're over there marking it up. Fire some questions out here.
I'm the introduction part. When I'm one of these people who heard of this, saw an article. Actually, my sister brought home books from school from Christendom College years and years and years ago, and started reading. And one of the things I started reading was the Summa. And I agree with you that if you just crack open the Summa and start reading, you're going to think, this guy's nuts. What is he saying? That's not right.
And then if you remember that he says this was written for beginners, you're like,
oh yeah, exactly.
Man, I don't want to read the advanced version.
Exactly. So when you pick up the Summa, one of our friends wants to do that. I don't know if he actually got a copy, but I sent him a link. But anyway, it comes nowadays, I think, typically five volumes. And there are four parts, with the second part divided into two sections, because I think it makes too fat of a book. I don't know why else it's that way. Maybe you'll tell us. But what are those parts? Why are those parts? And then we want to get into, pick out a particular question and tell us how he deals with that. So what are the parts?
Sure. So I would say that the Summa is really divided into it's three parts. There's and as you said, the second part is so large that they tend to divide it into two. So the right way to think about it, and you just kind of take my word for this, or go look at other people who have read Aquinas and or go read the thing yourself, and then you can see this. But zooming all the way out, take a bird's eye view over the whole Summa Theologiae. It's a dynamic work, really, and it follows a pattern that a lot of medieval theological texts and philosophical texts followed, which is called the exitus reditus, which is the great circle of being. So the first part of the Summa, he begins with God. Everything starts from God because it's theology. If you're not starting with God, then, you know, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And the first part, which is called the Prima Pars, it's normally referred to by its Latin title, is a long exposition on really the whole thing, you could say, is an answer to the question, what is God? There's a great story of St. Thomas when he was just a little boy, I think 5 years old, when he was sent off to Monte Cassino to study with the Benedictines, and he asked the abbot at that monastery, what is God? Quid est Deus? And the abbot couldn't answer the question. And so Aquinas became a theologian so he could answer it. And the whole first part of the Summa is an exploration of that question. And just to kind of give some cliff note teasers there, he would agree with that Benedictine abbot that we can't know what God is in a positive way. All of our knowledge of God, and this is a very important principle in reading Aquinas and in all of Catholic theology, and whether it's philosophical theology or, I'm not a dogmatic theologian, so I don't want to say that. But certainly for philosophical theology, all of our knowledge of God is negative, which means that we don't know what God is, but we know what he is not. And there's a long section in that first part called On the Divine Attributes, where he goes through after he's proved the existence of that uncaused cause or that unchanged changer, he analyzes that concept and deduces out an amazing number of attributes that just logically follow from the previous analysis of change that yielded his proof for the existence of God.
Mm-hmm.
And so he can prove that God is simple, God is one, God is eternal, God is not changing, God is incorporeal, which means not a body, and a whole range of things there. And then he looks at the more the revealed side, the revelation side, and he looks at the doctrine of the Trinity. And if you want your head to spin, that's some really good reading to make your head spin, because it's very complex analysis of the notion of what is a person and what is relation, and the idea that the persons of the Trinity are subsistent relations, but they are all part of one substance or one divine essence.
Mm-hmm.
So he analyzes that. And maybe this is just a bit too much, so I'll go more quickly on the second two parts. So he analyzes God, and then he turns to the creation. So there's the Creator, and then he looks at creation, which is understood as an outpouring of God's love in the act of creation, sharing God's own being, literally, because God, he describes as being itself. We are beings. God is being himself. And so every existing thing is, in a literal sense, participating. Mm-hmm. It's a participated existence. And so our existence is a share, actually already on a natural level, in the divine life. And then, of course, with baptism, the sacraments of grace, that's lifted up into a more perfect participation. But even on a natural level, Aquinas would say that there's the presence of God is dwelling in every being in a literal way. So he analyzes creation, culminating in the human person as the pinnacle of creation. And then in the third part of the Summa, he gets to Christ, who's really the penultimate pinnacle of creation. And in a sense, all of creation is a womb for the Logos to take on flesh.
Mm-hmm.
And then Christ is birthed into the universe, and with him takes all of reality back to the Father. So again, you get this dynamic sort of theme running throughout the very structure of the work. You begin with God, you go through creation, which is God's outpouring love, culminating in Christ, and then Christ, through his self-gift back to the Father, brings the whole created order back to its source, back to its origin, back to the Creator. So it's a dynamic work.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. All right, so let's go through a couple of you recommended Mortimer Adler's Aristotle for Everyone, and then, of course, Edward Fazer, which mm-hmm. we've had on the program here. And,
yeah, those are good. Real quick, before you move on a particular question, you open up the Summa, you turn to one of these parts, you hit on a particular question, and there's a style to that. And what's the basic structure that Aquinas uses in the Summa?
Right. So I break this down in the article.
And you only got four minutes, so go
yeah.
ahead.
Go ahead. So every question is posed in a yes-no form. There's only two logically possible answers to every article in the Summa. And he poses the question, and then immediately he moves into what are called the objections, which are summaries of the view that he is going to not adopt. They're summaries of the alternate view, and he gives very clear, very succinct summaries of the arguments for that position. Sometimes you read the objections, and you're convinced that some of these objectors have the right answer, because they're usually good arguments. He doesn't
right.
take on straw men.
Yeah.
And then he moves to the section called On the Contrary, or Sed Contra, where he quotes usually an authority, might be a church father, might be Aristotle, which is an authoritative answer for the view that he will adopt. And the largest body of the article comes under the heading, I Answer That, where he gives his own argument for that position. And notice that the juxtaposition between an argumentative answer, where he puts his own view forward, juxtaposed to the authoritative source answer, there's an implied harmony between faith and reason in that very structure.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then after he gives his argument, he goes into the replies and answers each of the objectors. So an objector says, you know, X, and then he says, in response to X, this is what it is. And he normally makes a careful distinction where he shows where the objector is partly right and partly wrong.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, where do we get a copy of the Summa?
Oh, man. I hope your local Catholic bookstore is
there. You
selling
go.
It. You can well, certainly it's... you can certainly find it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. But, right. Yeah, if you have a good local Catholic bookstore, I'd support them if you can.
Yeah.
Yep.
You can also read the whole thing for free online over at New Advent.
New Advent.
And
Now, are they still teaching Aquinas in seminaries? Is he still considered like the angelic doctor, or are there other philosophers that are competing for our young seminarians' time these days?
Right. Well, I mean, the good seminaries certainly are.
I would agree with
there
that.
There seems to be, in the last 50 years or so, there's been a real decline in teaching of Aquinas. But since the turn of this new 21st century, there seems to be a resurgence. So
excellent.
There's a lot of hope there.
Well, you just wonder who could possibly displace Aquinas. I mean, I know he wasn't perfect or right on everything, but, you know,
well, our
it's
Lord
awfully
said,
hard.
Our Lord told him, you have written well of me, so I'm
yes,
not sure what you're
gets a good
referring
point.
To, but go ahead.
Yeah, that's a great point. No, that's what I mean. I mean, you have written well of me, and I don't, you know, maybe Pope John Paul and his faith and reason, but even that is...
Or Leo the 13th.
Eterni Patris. Leo called for that revival, man. I think we need to bring it back.
Yeah, I agree. David Smither, thank you so much for your time. And by the way, I hope you're getting around to writing a book, so we'll have you back on. And
yeah, and good article in the National Catholic
Register
there, St. Thomas Aquinas,
St. Thomas
for Beginners.
For Beginners. Yep. Look it up, folks.
Hey, gentlemen, and, thank you so much for your time.
You
good
too.
To be
and
with
good luck
you.
In the oil fields. Keep on drilling or pumping, selling, whatever.
And
we'll, all right, take care. We'll, you know, Vince, people think Aquinas is too hard, and he is, but I think his point about if you take the time to get the three or four definitions down and get the style first, then you can work through it.
Yeah, and interestingly, the Summa is really handy for looking up a particular topic, and so
yeah.
you don't necessarily
you don't
have to
read
be
it all
an
at
expert.
Once. Yeah.
That's right. It helps to get at the background, but in my own, it's a lot of times having read through it once a long, long time ago, you just go look up an article and get the points on.
Well,
things.
I have never read the Summa. I have the Summa of the Summa, which is a little.
Yeah, I bought the five volumes back when I was young and dumb and had a little bit of money.
And time.
And time. But frankly, I think the metaphysics and the Aquinas stuff, it's very helpful to be able to think and to be able to reject the culture that's so confused these days.
I agree. We'll be back on either side of the break. We've got a great stack. I'm going to let Vince lead this time. Sometimes I feel like I monopolize the airtime. So
on the Mike Genesis show.
We'll see you after the other side of the break.